It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer, I just play one on a podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Two Nerds in a Pod, episode 159. It's Tuesday, which means it's time to get nerdy. This is, as we like to claim, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse, bonded by love. Your two co-hosts are myself, Maction, a tech enthusiast and occasional streamer, and my good friend and stand-up comedian, Mr. Lom Galuka, also known as Mr. Nice Guy.
That is me.
Our one-hour mission is to bring you guys news, history, issues, crowdfunding, trivia, and lawsuits that are important to video games, and our recurring sponsor this week happens to be Game Insider Magazine. And, so let's get this started. Mr. Nice Guy, how are you doing,
dude,
friend?
I'm doing fantastic, man. Now, if you have been listening to the podcast for a long time, as many of the listeners here tonight live have, you know that I have had a Blue Snowball mic in the past. But I now have a much nicer, upgraded mic from a company that I kickstarted, and I think my voice is silky smooth, Mac, and I'm loving it already, man. So that's what's new with me. Other than that, just basic stuff. Things are going okay. How are things on your end?
Things are okay. I mean, oh gosh, I've been doing a lot of lumberjacking.
You're
lately.
Kidding.
Not
You're
so
kidding.
Much. No, I've been felling a lot of trees. I haven't been doing it with an axe, but I've been doing it a lot with a chainsaw.
Were you wearing like plaid flannel shirts as you were doing this? Because I can't picture that at all.
Yes, a plaid flannel shirt because it's thick and it's long sleeved. And when you've got branches poking around at you, it's pretty good. And a big old floppy hat to keep the sun off. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's one of those things where it's definitely interesting. It's kind of unique, and while I have done plenty of wood cutting in the past, this has been the first time where I've been cutting down trees that were threatening structures.
Okay.
So specifically, it was high stakes is what I'm getting at, because, you know, you do this wrong and
death.
Exactly. So it's the most interesting thing that's going on in my life right now, with the exception of this, and with the exception of what's going on tomorrow.
That's right. Mac is a real-life Wreck-It Ralph, y'all. I did not know this. But tomorrow is the Podcast Awards, right, Mac? And we're excited for that. Or I should say the results of the Podcast Awards. And we have something special planned for the people. Why don't you tell them about that?
So when the Podcast Awards go live, which is going to be, if I remember properly, 6 p.m. Pacific. So 7 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m.
Eastern time.
Then we will actually be live on this channel, and you'll have our two little floating heads combined with the actual awards themselves. So we're going to do a restream and live commentary, live congratulatory on the Podcast Awards.
Potentially a live celebratory if we win the Games and Hobbies section that we are in.
Yes.
As well. So hopefully that happens. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. And I mean, you know, if we don't win it, almost everybody there is fantastic. So, I mean, it wouldn't be the end of the world, but I'd really love to win it.
It'd be kind of dope, man. We'll get those little trophies.
I think that's all the interesting stuff going on. Mr. Nice Guy, what do you say we do what we do best and hop right into that game?
I say let's do it. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you for tuning in to episode 159 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the only debate that really matters tonight, September 29th, 2020. There's no other debates going on more important than this one. Let's jump right into some news. And Mac, we're going to come with the heavy hitters right off the get-go. This news story comes from Ilker Kosal with Forbes. Let's read a little bit about this. It's about Amazon's new gaming service. It says, at its 2020 hardware event, Amazon launched a cloud gaming platform called Luna. With this move, Google's Stadia and Microsoft's xCloud get their new competitor in the cloud gaming field. Here's the basics of it, Mac, if you have not heard of it yet, which I'm sure you have. Users of Luna will be able to stream games wirelessly without downloading them. We've heard of this before, right? On the PC, Mac, Fire TV, and iOS, with Android version planned for after launch. Mac, iOS coming before Android, man. I'm telling you. iOS has taken over. The introductory price will be $5.99 per month with early access, which gives subscribers the ability to play Luna Plus Channel across two devices simultaneously and offers 4K and 60 frames per second. As far as what types of games, Mac, because everyone wants to know the games, right? There's going to be 100 to start. They'll include titles like Resident Evil 7, Control, Panzer Dragoon. Have you heard of that one?
I have heard of that.
Nice. I thought you might.
Are we indeed talking about Panzer Dragoon, the one that came out for the Sega Saturn back in the day?
I believe so, which is extremely weird. It says Panzer Dragoon, and I don't know of any other version of it, so...
Well, Panzer Dragoon Orta, perhaps. That's the one that came out for the original Xbox, and I would have expected to have, for that to have been more this... you know, platform speed, but, you know.
Who knows? Hey. Maybe they're going retro. A Plague Tale: Innocent Search 2, Ukulele Grid, Abzu and Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons. Amazon says more titles will be added over time. Mac, here's one other detail before I get your thoughts on this. They are also going to have a Ubisoft channel specific to this service, and I believe it's going to cost extra. So maybe a little nickel and diming here. Based on what you've heard so far, what are your thoughts on this service? Are you interested at all?
Not really.
Why not? Why not?
I'm a broken record, but because you asked, I will share. I am not a fan of gaming services that have digital-only distribution, because if video game companies have shown one thing over the years, it's that they don't do a good job of maintaining the data. They don't do a good job of keeping, you know, hold of the games. And so, I mean, digital only just takes, you know, takes video games as an art form from being one foot in the grave to being one foot in the grave and the other foot on a banana peel.
Well, let me just say, as a point of clarification, when we say digital only here, we're talking about streaming only, right? So it's not even downloading. And I get that it is the same issue, but I just want to make sure that our viewers understand you're not downloading the games, you're actually streaming them in this situation.
Yes. Yeah, no, great clarification. And yeah, that's what I'm talking about with the banana peel. It's that the data never even resides in a form that you could theoretically fix it in and retain. I mean, I will just point to the Legend of Korra video game was available on Steam for a while there. It is, because of licensing, no longer available for purchase anywhere. And, you know, so you can't buy a new, you can't buy a copy of it anymore. But because it was not digital, you know, because it was not streamed, I still maintain the copy that I have in my Steam library and a backup that I keep, you know, on my computer, so that theoretically speaking, even if it were to go away completely and entirely, I could stand a chance of being able to play it. And I actually really like that game, so I want to hang on to it.
Okay, so let me ask you this. So let's talk about pricing, strictly pricing.
Okay.
Being $5.99 a month to have access to 100 games or so. It's probably going to be a rotation of games. Just to put things in perspective, Mac, because I know you're not as much into consoles as I am, Xbox Game Pass, $15 a month, which gives you your Xbox Live subscription, the ability to play online, as well as access to a rotation of games. Amazon doing something similar, albeit without exclusive games, for $5.99. What are your thoughts on the price?
You know, the price is actually pretty all right, I suppose. I mean, then again, I'm not really going for any of these, but I feel like $5.99 is not too much to ask if you are interested in having this type of a service. If you're interested in games as a service, $5.99 a month is kind of that sweet spot, and I feel like they're not reaching too far with too little.
Yeah, here's what I would say. I would say the way Amazon could really get this going, and I think this is brilliant, Amazon, if you do this, I want royalties. Do this, but do it at a discount for people that already have an Amazon Prime subscription. And I am not by any stretch saying that Amazon Prime is not already giving me enough value, right? Because I get a free Twitch Prime sub each month. I can subscribe to someone's channel for free, which is a $5 value or so. I get all of my Amazon Prime stuff within 2 days or even a day sometimes shipped to my house. I get access to Amazon Prime Video, which has some good movies and shows, original shows on it. But if Amazon said, hey, you know what? $2 a month instead of $5.99 a month, you can get access to this service. To me, I'd probably do it just for the ability to play some games on my iPad when I'm laying in bed that I can't play on my Switch, right?
Mm.
But for someone who already wants to play games like Control and all these other games, they have a PS4 already. They have a way to play these. And I don't think that this is enticing a segment that does not already have access to these types of games in physical form or downloadable form. So that's my opinion on it. I don't know if you have anything else you want to add as far as that goes.
Not really. I'm afraid I'm just too blinded by my bias against these streaming services.
What do you think about the competition aspect? Because this is going up against the Stadia. It's going up against Project xCloud, which I'll give you a reminder of Project xCloud. That's Microsoft's service, which will allow you to do a similar thing. Right now it's only on Android, but soon it will be on iOS. You can play all of your Game Pass games portably on your phone or Android tablet. What do you think about that? Does it give more competition and increase quality from other people?
Well, I am of the opinion that, you know, when you have more people competing in the same sphere, that quality does tend to improve because, you know, there is a drive to make innovations. And just so long as it's competition in fact and not competition in theory, then yeah, that tends to work out. And so this could be good. This could be good overall. And here's to hoping that it does incentivize things. I mean, there are enough Stadia exclusives, for example, that will only be streamed and are unique to Stadia so that the second Google shuts it down, those games are lost forever. And that's unfortunate, but I mean, here's to hoping that something about what Amazon does or something about what Microsoft does convinces them to be more reasonable about stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's my big thing here. Even within that context of hoping for competition, I hope the competition incentivizes the correct decision to be made about video games as an art form.
Absolutely. And awesome comments in the chat. People talking about latency and how that's always an issue with streaming, as well as the fact that Google and Amazon are both rich and they can afford to do this. Well, let's keep things moving on. This next story comes from Game Informer by Leanna Rupert, and it deals with Godfall. It's going to talk about next-gen pricing, Mac. We've already talked about this a little bit, but we're going to talk about it again. It says, the studio behind Godfall has confirmed the pricing for the three editions of the game coming out on November 12th, with pre-orders now available. For those interested in scooping up the upcoming title, here are the three different versions that are available to pre-purchase. Standard Edition Mac is going to be $69.99, not $59.99, $69.99. We're going up $10. Godfall Deluxe, $89.99. Godfall Ascended, $99.99, $100. All versions will come with a special Godfall starter pack. Mac, the reason that I bring this story up is because Godfall is going to be a new IP. It's going to be a PS5 exclusive, or I should say a PlayStation exclusive, and it's not something that's established. In my opinion, I can understand if NBA 2K is going to charge $70. I can understand if Call of Duty is going to charge $70, because those are games where, to a certain extent, we know what we are getting. They're a known quantity. We've played them for years and years and years, if we're into those games. Godfall, brand new, it looks dope, action RPG, but we don't know. Bad idea or good idea for a new IP to establish itself by charging the higher next-gen price? What do you think?
Well, I mean, as far as we know, I think you just said it, that it's the higher next-gen price. I mean, to charge what is going to presumably be the new going rate is neither a good idea nor a bad idea. It's just an idea. And I mean, this might hurt them a little bit, but that will likely be soon forgotten.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think you're right. And I think it will be forgotten if the game is good. Or let's say if it's a 7 or above on Metacritic, like 7 out of 10, I think that it'll be okay. If the game ends up being a mess, I think that people will be upset. Because I feel like it's gotten a decent amount of hype, and I feel like because it is an exclusive, that people are expecting a certain caliber of game, because Sony exclusives are generally pretty good. We give them the benefit of the doubt. You want to charge me $70, Sony, fine. You've proven yourself over and over and over again. But if it ends up being bad, I think it's going to be a problem.
No, I agree. But to your point about people being really mad if it's, you know, if it winds up being a flop, I mean, the amount of vitriol that I hear and see, or rather read, when people dislike a game that they paid even $15 or $20 for, you know, I don't know if that... I think there's like a topping out point when it comes to video games and anger over over the price point. I don't think people could be more upset about a $70 bad purchase than a $20 purchase. Not that I don't think it's possible, just that I don't see the gradual ramp up. I just see rage. And maybe I'm looking in the wrong places.
Well, dude, you know what's interesting? I have Xbox Game Pass, and I feel like I'm playing those games for free, even though I am technically paying to play them. And when I play a bad game on there, my only frustration is that it was a waste of my time. And when I sense that a game is going to be bad, I will just stop playing it because I feel like I have gotten it for free. However, if I pay $70 for a game, me personally, I'm more upset if that game is bad, because I not only wasted time on it, but I paid $70. And now I feel like I need to get my money's worth by slogging through a game that is bad. And that's just me. But I do see your point. I absolutely do. Any other comments before we kind of move things along to the next next story?
No, I just feel really... I feel sad in some ways and happy in others. As we know... the people involved with the creation of a game are rarely paid as well as they probably deserve to be.
Agreed.
And while I would love to think that this increase in pricing for the next gen will result in better payment to the people who are doing the work,
sure,
the people in the trenches making the game happen, that is unlikely to happen. But I can dream, can't I? I would be more comfortable paying higher prices than I currently do on video games if I knew that that money was going to the people who did the work.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that. Well, let's do one last news story. These have been great discussions, but we want to keep things moving along. So this last one comes from GameSpot.com. Just a simple kind of cool story about some accessibility options being added to Assassin's Creed Valhalla. This is by Steve Watts at GameSpot. The new trailer for Assassin's Creed Valhalla introduces some new story hooks and finally ties the story to the assassins. But the trailer is also notable for its accessibility options. Skipping down, as noted by accessibility specialist in Hamilton on Twitter, the YouTube version of the trailer features a new option in the settings menu. Right between the subtitles and quality options, you can find a new audio track option, which lets producers upload audio track variants. In the case of the Valhalla story trailer, that includes an English descriptive option, which includes narration for blind viewers worked in nicely between bits of dialogue. Mac, this is literally just a feel-good story because I really like the concept of making things accessible to as many people as possible. If someone is blind, if someone is deaf, whatever it may be, I feel like we should try to make sure that those games are accessible to them in some form. And I know that you're in agreement with that as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is great. I've felt for a while now that the Xbox Adaptive Controls, that was really, really awesome. Obviously, there is some amount of limitation there. You can only do so much with the with a controller that's more accessible. You know, this is great, the ability to make games more accessible to people who otherwise would have trouble. That feel good story, yes, this is the kind of news we need right now. Thank you.
No problem. And that has been our news for the week, Mac.
All right, well, now that we've taken a look at stuff going on right now, let's take a little look into the past. I have a few games in mind that were released this week in years before. Technically, I'll start with the earlier stuff first and say technically we begin our tale with 2017 because technically there was an SNES release of Star Fox 2.
Yes.
An unreleased game that they released for the SNES Classic.
That's right. That's right.
So technically that, which, I mean, I don't know. Have you played Star Fox 2?
I have not played Star Fox 2 yet.
Me neither. And one of these days I will get to it, but, It is not this day. We'll move a little bit farther back of 2007, Halo 3 for the Xbox 360. That came up last week in game trivia, where Mr. Nice Guy nailed that question, and I recently had the delight of playing it via the Halo Master Chief Collection on PC with a friend of mine, so that was good and fun too. A little bit farther back, 2001, we saw the release of Silent Hill 2 on the PlayStation 2. Now, I am not a connoisseur of the Silent Hill franchise, but I understand that Silent Hill 2 certainly has its fans. But nonetheless, worth mentioning. 1996, the launch of the Nintendo 64.
Yes,
of course,
yes.
With Super Mario 64. And I mean, even I, someone who didn't get a Nintendo 64 until just a few years ago and did not play through Super Mario 64 until, again, just a few years ago, I cannot deny the delight of playing that game, especially when I wasn't yelling at Lakitu to, you know, work with me on the camera angles.
That's right.
But, you know, nonetheless. But the real one that I wanted to zero in on was the release in 1993 on the Mac for Myst. Myst, you might be also familiar with with the sequel game, Riven. These were essentially atmospheric point-and-click games, right? Pre-rendered photos that you would page through. You would move through the thing. And I think that a lot of great things are covered on an Ars Technica War Stories video about Myst. But I think the coolest thing about it is that there were severe technological limitations in trying to get Myst playable, because these were going to be on CD, on compact disc, if you will. And at the time, there was really only one speed that compact discs could run at. I mean, maybe somebody had a dual speed, but for the most part, they just had one speed they could run at. And another related old technology by most people's standards, hard drive platters. You know, these, I've got a point going on here. There are read and seek speeds that are possible, right? This is one of the reasons why most of us have transitioned away from hard drive platters onto SSDs, because we don't have the same limitations of spinning up a disk and trying to read data from it. So, at the time, 158 kilobytes per second was the sequential read speed. That was the read as it traveled along the disk at its one single speed, spitting out those ones and zeros, putting data into the buffer in order to give you a gaming experience. But seeking to different places on the disk would have been madness. And so they had to do a lot of work to, number one, try and compress all these pre-rendered images down so that there weren't horrible lag times, but also to integrate not just the images, but also the music, the background music, the music from, you know, you click a thing, shutters open, and there's a shutter open sound. And the way that they did that was they followed the same principles of disk defragmentation, which had been around, you know, since, I want to say, 85 or 87. And the idea is that data that you're going to be using in the same, you know, in the same use applications, you stack near the same place on the disk, or in a hard drive sense, on the platter, so that you don't have to stray very far to find the other data points. Now, this isn't anywhere near as big of a deal now as it was back then, but in a lot of the ways in which the game runs, is directly informed by the limitations of the time. And if you haven't before thought about what kinds of cuts had to be made, what kinds of creative decisions could not happen because they had to build to that 158 kilobytes per second sequential read speed that was available from discs of the time. This is why I think Myst is such an important game, not just because it was cool, because it was fun, because I love it, but also because it serves as a good marker in technology, in video game history, to just be like, hey, there were real reasons that we had to do stuff like this back in the day, and the art was informed by the tech, and it still winds up being a fantastic game, and one that has held up really well. That's what I had for video game history today, but if you have not already played Myst, you owe it to yourself to get a copy and play it, because it is, as the youths would say, baller.
Fire, straight fire. Well, thank you for that history lesson, Mac. Very informative, literally, dude. I did not know about the disc defragmentation that was taking place in order for that to work properly.
I can't say for 100% certainty, because, I mean, I'm not them, but disc defragmentation, the concept of stacking your data close together so that you can read it faster when you're limited by that type of technology,
sure,
was already in existence. So I feel like it's probably safe to say that their experience with it informed their, oh, hey, we could do this. But, you know, so that's just me a little bit going out on a limb there. But I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility.
Sure. Yeah, totally get it, man. Well, cool. Next up is our topic of the week, a segment where we talk about something relevant in gaming history, rather relevant in gaming present, the hottest story, and we give our opinions on it. And this week, you know what we're talking about. We're talking about CD Projekt Red and Cyberpunk. This story comes from Bloomberg, written by Jason Schreier, and I will take liberties, Mac, and summarize what is going on. Many of us are looking forward to Cyberpunk 2077. It's going to be an amazing game. It has been delayed a couple times. It's supposed to come out close to the launch of the new consoles in November. Basically, the company CD Projekt Red in the past has said that they are not going to delay it again, that the current release date is set in stone. Now, Jason Schreier reported today that a year ago he did a story on them, and they told him that they would not use crunch as a means of getting this done, that they would not have their employees working excessive hours in order for this game to come out on time. Well, today they announced that they are indeed going to require for the next 6 weeks that employees participate in mandatory crunch. And Mac, it's a tough situation. It's a very controversial topic. There are people who are on both sides of the situation. One of the biggest games of the year, let's be clear. To put things in perspective, CD Projekt Red is also the company that put out The Witcher 3. They are well established. They are a AAA studio. They put out very, very deep experiences where you can get hundreds of hours. Regardless, what are your thoughts on this?
I am again it. I think I'll refer back to an earlier comment that the people who are in the trenches, the people who are really putting the game together, are not the ones who are getting well compensated, you know, for their work. I mean, of course, that is a relative term, you know, well compensated. But, you know, the majority of the price of the game is not going back. The royalties are not going back to the people who put in the time and the effort. And unless CD Projekt Red does things in a way that is incredibly different that I don't know about, I suspect that, you know, that they will be also not well compensated, or at least not well enough compensated for the crunch. And yeah, no, I just, crunch isn't good for anyone. I don't think it's ever been good for anyone, and I don't think it's good for them now.
So, Mac, I did a little poll. I wanted to see what the viewers would think about this before we did the show. And so I posted this question on Twitter about if people think that crunch, meaning overtime, is an acceptable practice in the video game industry, in development. And it was pretty lopsided. The results as of right now are 27% of people say yes, it is an acceptable practice. 73% of people say no, it is not. Now, if you'll indulge me for a minute, one person also commented on the tweet. These are some of our fellow podcasters with the Game Insider Network, Video Game Crosstalk. And this is what they had to say. He said, so binary answer is yes. However, if it gets to the point where devs are finding empty offices to cry in and personal relationships are crumbling, you may have crossed a line somewhere. And I respect that opinion. You know, it's not like these are child laborers. And I totally get that when you have crunch going on and it starts at the top and trickles down, that there's a certain amount of pressure that comes to people to also want to perform, and they fear that they may get a bad performance evaluation or they may not get promotional opportunities in the future if they don't do the crunch hours. But if people are willing to do it, I think that it's okay. Now, let's be very clear. In this situation, it's mandatory crunch. And so it's a different beast.
Well, yeah, no, I agree with you. It's a different beast. And I think that a lot of times, you know, we talk about voluntary crunch or being willing to put in the hours. And I hearkening back to the comment that you made earlier about, you know, buying the game for however many dollars and like, oh, I guess I have to power through
exactly.
it because I paid so much for
yeah.
it. You know, the development team, I'm sure, is paying for it with their own, you know, with their own potentially missed dates or anniversaries. At what point in time, when they've already sacrificed so much, are they going to be willing to walk away? I think that it's like, it's all well and good for us to be like, yeah, it's voluntary and they could do this, but I mean, there's a thing that we all humans do with that sunk cost, and we just let it keep on snowballing even when it would be better to jump to something else. I mean, if you've got a 1970s Jeep that you've been keeping running through your blood, sweat, and tears for decades, And sure, you could get a new, you know, you could get a new Ford Taurus or something like that. But this Jeep, it's just been with you for so long. So you just keep on pouring more and more time and effort and energy into it. I mean, that's the sunk cost. And we all do it for sentimentality. And when a video game is such an artistic endeavor and you're pouring so much of yourself into that, then, I mean, how can you walk away?
Yeah, it's hard. And let me be 100% clear. I read a comment that's kind of in favor of it with a caveat that came from our good friends, Video Game Crosstalk. Check them out. But I'm against it as a general rule. Now, here's where I kind of feel conflicted a little bit, Mac. Indulge me. When people say, oh, you shouldn't force video game developers to work extra hours, I feel like they're saying it because they don't see video games as a legitimate job or as a legitimate art form. I think that that's their motivation for saying it. And that's where I disagree. Because if it's someone who is flipping burgers, or if it's someone who is washing cars, or if it's someone who's doing some other job, no one really complains when there's crunch. No one says, hey, you're making people get burned out washing these cars, you know what I mean? Or renting these cars, like I did right out of college, right? No one, yeah. No one's worried about that. But when it comes to video games, for some reason, people really, really get upset about crunch and really, really get upset about working extra hours. Whereas in these other, you know, hourly jobs, right, entry-level positions, no one really gets mad about it. Think about interns, or rather like associates at a law firm. How many hours are they working, right? Pulling papers, doing all kinds of nonsense for the senior lawyers. And the reason that they do it is because they believe that someday they may be able to get to that point where they don't have to, and where they are in that higher position. And so I just feel like there's kind of a double standard, if that makes sense.
I hear what you're saying. I don't think that because we don't complain about it in one industry is really a good argument for why it's not as bad in other industries. I kind of feel like it's universally not good. But, you know, I mean, we hear about the video games. I feel like we are all video gamers now. So crunch in video games is something that affects or at least impacts us a bit more universally than it once did. And so I think that's why there's more strong opinions about this than about, overworking or burning out people in other industries or lower paying industries or even, you know, as interns. But I'm just... Well, we might just have to agree to disagree.
Yeah, just for the sake of time. And I'll let you have the last word on that. Any comments in the chat? I'd like to acknowledge. Can we read like two of those and let's keep it moving? You want to pick a couple?
Ishmobile throws out, I feel like I'm always harping on this, but studies shows that overtime is bad for everybody. Investors, managements, everybody. And Galvatron does throw out that in The Last of Us 2, there's an astounding amount of detail, and some people just take that for granted, but I thought about how much crunch Naughty Dog employees had to do for that level of detail, and if that excruciating detail really improved the overall quality of the game. So, you know, maybe some diminishing returns, even in the final product, on Last of Us 2, is what I'm hearing, and, you know, how could we know? We need to get that slider's device and slide into a different universe in order to find out.
That's right. That has been our topic of the week.
All right. Well, now we're going to look at a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off the ground. We call this segment Kick or Kickstart because I'm going to drop a link into the chat. I'm going to give my best presentation, and then we're going to talk about the virtues and the vices and say whether or not we think it should be kicked out of here or whether it should be kickstarted. And we want you who are here with us live to weigh in as well. What we are talking about is The Last Stand Aftermath. It is a roguelite single-player experience action adventure game. This is made by Con Artist Games. If that sounds familiar, you may remember them from the old Flash games days. So we're talking Newgrounds, we're talking stuff like that. This is, I believe, the fifth installment in The Last Stand. There were several, they were kind of, you know, side view, the zombies would come in waves, you would shoot them and all that jazz. I have some very fond memories of taking time that I should have been using for schoolwork in the computer lab and clicking away on games like The Last Stand. They are looking for, let's see, the amount they're looking for is $50,000 to fund the game. They've got 22 days left to go and they're already at $13,000. If you want a copy of the game, the tier that you're looking for is the $25 pledge, for this game to be on, PC for you. Estimated delivery June 2021. Now, $40, though, I will note, is going to give you beta access to the game. And I have to read a question that is answered in this Kickstarter, because I think it's, you know, because I think it's pertinent here. The question, it says, please note that you will not be permitted to stream or share screenshots, footage, or other material from the game. Because the game is still in active development, it is important for us to be able to control how the game is shared and presented until it approaches its final form. I have problems with this, but we can come back to that. Because I have, you know, because I want to hear what you think before I start talking about my misgivings. Let's start with the positive.
With my positives or yours?
Yeah.
So I'm okay with that, what you just said, with them not wanting people to stream it. I mean, that's very standard procedure for many games where they give early access to people. So I don't have a problem with that at all. I like that they're making something that we're familiar with and doing it in a universe, in a theme that is something we're also familiar with. So they're doing zombies, right? We all know zombies. We know how it works. You shoot them. You have limited ammo. You got to aim for the head, right? You don't want to get bit. We know how roguelites work, right? You play through, you die, and then you start a new run, and so you keep some of your weapons and things like that. You keep some of your upgrades. That's what I like about it. What I don't like about it is those exact same things. It's a roguelite, which is something we have a lot of, and it's a zombie game, which is something we already have way too much of. And so I don't know if this is going to catch anyone's eye. I don't think that it's something that we need right now.
Well, I will say, since, of course, the podcast itself is more of an audio medium, in addition to, you know, the roguelite aspects and such, it is a sort of isometric view from up top, a third-person isometric view. There's going to be, you know, some amount of building your base and the like, but I mean, what zombie game would there not be without, you know, looting, building, traveling, and hopefully surviving as long as you can? That being said, though, I hear what you're saying. I don't know as I'm burned out of zombies and roguelites myself, but I definitely hear what you're saying there. So let me throw out some of the stuff that I don't like now. For starters, I feel like that embargoing the beta access, especially when it's a Kickstarter, is a bad idea. I have kickstarted plenty of games that have had beta access. I have never backed one that had an embargo. They were all very, very cool with it, and I think it's one of those things that I feel like makes the development, you know, improves the development. I hear what they are saying with, like, well, we don't want to be, I mean, dictated to, I suppose. We don't want to be pressured by outside forces, perhaps. But I have only seen that do good things for the development of,
like, in terms of exposure, or as far as terms of them getting feedback from a larger audience?
The latter. Okay. And I suspect the former as well, but certainly the latter. But I mean, you know, it's their game. They can do things with that. So I will say, though, I haven't always been pleased with the other titles in the Last Stand games. I think it was the third one that really went with this sort of almost pay-to-win, pay-to-play type of model. It was, the first two were free and pretty darn good, and then it went to this sort of thing where it's just like, oh, build your base. It's like, well, you know, maybe pay extra money to have it, you know, to have it go faster.
Yeah, exactly.
It had, you know, had lots of that, which I really didn't appreciate and didn't like. And then, of course, you know me, if you're going to ask for my money, I want to see a playable demo. I don't want to see pre-renders. I don't want to see any of that. I want to try it out myself and let me make up my mind. Yep. And this doesn't have a playable demo with
it. No. What are they thinking?
I feel like it's an outflow of the beta access idea. The idea that we want to tightly control what you see about it, and we want to tightly, you know, we want, it is important for us to be able to control how the game is shared and presented until it approaches its final form. And I think this is a way where keeping too tight of a control is a no thank you from me. So I guess I've already given mine. I say kick for those reasons. Con Artist Games, I wish you the best, but I mean, you know, come bring in the fire next time.
I mean, and just like, honestly, their name is Con Artist Games. I don't know. And you won't let people see what you're working. Like, honestly, that sounds kind of suspect. I'm joking a little bit, but I feel the same way. And I don't feel like we've had a dual kick in a while here on the podcast.
Turns out Con Artist Games was the imposter.
Bum, bum, bum. I vote kick as well, and it looks like it's pretty unanimous in the chat, right, Mac? What do you think?
Indeed. Spenis is out. Price points are good for no beta, but the ones with beta access is quite steep. The cons outweigh the pros. Ishmobile is doesn't think he'd actually buy it at 25. Give it the kick. Kane with the kick. Yeah, it looks like it looks like it's looking sus. So we'll just have to leave it at kick. We wish you all the best. We hope you get funded, but sadly, Con Artist Games, the Last Stand aftermath is just not for us. And that's been kick or kickstart.
That is exactly right. Now, Mac, one question I have about it real quick. What consoles is it coming to? Just to PC?
As far as I can see, PC only.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for a segment we like to call Nerdflex.
Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo.
a segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the hosts and you never quite do. So if you have questions that you want to ask us this week to try to stump us, get those in the chat right freaking now.
Now, in the meantime, before we get started, I just want to say that it is time for another Two Nerds in a Pod sound test. You always come bringing the trivia for us. Well, now, here's the chance for you to prove your nerdiness. I am choosing a sound somewhere, somewhen, somehow in video games, and we will play it now. If you know where that comes from, be sure to tweet at Two Nerds in a Pod with the hashtag soundtest and identify this episode 159. And if you have the correct guest, the first one to make the correct guess, you could win a Perler made by me, delivered to you, such as the one I'm holding in my hand right now, which is a blue winged turtle.
That thing is freaking beautiful, dude. You got to be here for the live show so you can see that. I want that. I need one of your Perlers for my wall. Let's talk later. I'll pay the shipping.
I guess you're just going to have to do one of these.
Oh, what? I'm your co-host. I can't even get one for free, man. That's messed up. I'm going to get this sound test right before all the rest of you. I want that Perler. So once again, get those questions in the chat if you have them ready to go. And our first question is going to be, I have no idea what this is about. But here's the question. Name the main character to whom Murray the Demonic Talking Skull is a sidekick. I have no idea what the freak this is about.
Oh my gosh.
This is a question from our test bank.
Yeah, no, this is a point and click adventure. It's Monkey Island. Guybrush Threepwood.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah. Are you not familiar?
No, and you're not that familiar either because you had to struggle to remember. So neither of us is that familiar with it. Come on, Matt.
It's going back a long way.
Fair enough.
But yeah, Guybrush Threepwood.
Okay, I'm going to read that again because I have no idea talking about. Name the main character to whom Murray the Demonic Talking Skull is a sidekick. He said Guybrush... I don't even know what you said.
Guybrush Threepwood.
Okay, let's check the answer. My goodness. Guybrush Threepwood is correct, ladies and gentlemen. I don't even know. I still am completely lost.
At some point in time, I promise, I will stream playing through, playing through that series of games. As a matter of fact, fellow streamer, good friend, Papaya Chemist recently did a playthrough of all of those, which is another reason why it's kind of kind of at the front of my mind.
Well, it looks like we have a question in the chat from our good friend Spenis. And I'm going to ask for his mercy and see if he'll give us multiple choice options for this question. But here's the question, Mac. In the Uncharted series, what is Sully's actual first name?
I've never played Uncharted. I have no idea.
Oh, Spen is making it tough, man. I said, dude, can you give us multiple choice? He's like, you should know this one without it, nice guy. And he's right, because I've played all of the 4 canon Uncharted games.
So is Sully the main character? No, that's Nathan Drake.
Nathan Drake's the main character. Sully is like a sidekick, like a good friend, older friend. I am going to go with that his first name, his real name is Saul.
Saul. Okay. Saul Goodman.
Dude, it's been a while since I finished Uncharted 4, like at least a couple years.
Sure.
So that's what I'm going to go with. Mac, why don't you just throw out another common first name?
Ben. I'll say Ben.
While we're waiting, shout out real quick to Kane for gifting 2 subs during this stream. We really appreciate you, sub. Or rather, Kane giving those subs out. Spenis confirms it's actually Victor. Victor Sullivan. All right, I would not have gotten that.
I should have known.
Well, Mac, we got a third question here from the test bank. Let's go ahead and do this.
Okay.
And this is one that sounds easy at first glance, but it's easy to get wrong, I believe. It's a Konami question. What is the famous Konami code? So I always mess this up when I say it out loud, but it's something to the effect of up, up, down, down, down. Left, right,
B.
And then is it B A? And then is there select start on there or no?
No. Tell you what, you say B A, I'll say A B. I'm pretty sure it's B A, so I'm pretty
sure. I thought
sure
it was
right.
Okay, okay. And there's no select start. So up, up, down, down, left, right, B A.
Mm-hmm.
There's no
and
select start? Okay. Alright, let's flip it over and see.
Yeah, that's. I mean,
you're right. If there was select start, it would have totally just started the game. You know what
well,
I mean?
I mean, you do press start after you've finished it, but that's not a. But I'm 99% sure that's not the thing.
Okay, so here is the answer: up, up, down, down, left, right, B A.
B A. You're B-A. Correct, Mr. Nice
B-A.
Guy. I am not worthy.
You are worthy because you got the first one right, and I had no idea what it was. We went 2 for 3. Thank you so much for playing Nerdflex, and we'll keep things moving.
All right. Well, now we move on to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
So we've got an interesting one for you. And for starters, I need to apologize because what we're going to talk about is Nintendo v. Storeman, a.k.a. the ROM Universe lawsuit. Now, when our story first got started last September, Two Nerds in a Pod was on hiatus while I was living in the mountains of southern Utah with no internet and no cell phone, so we didn't really have a chance to cover it back then. But when it landed, Nintendo was seeking $2 million for each case of trademark infringement and $150,000 for each case of copyright infringement. As each individual ROM would basically meet both of those requirements, you'd be looking at over $1 billion from just the NES library of ROMs alone. Not to mention the rest of the consoles that they were, you know, hosting. So, a lot of money. So, in this, the way that it went is Nintendo sued. Storeman responded by being like, oh, but Digital Millennium copyright protections. And there's been some back and forth, because that's what you do. You get the complaint, and then you have a response, and then Storeman's just like, hey, judge, couldn't you just, you know, summarily dismiss this, throw it out? And the judge was like, no, nope, not happening. And so they're now in this point in time called discovery, which is when you have to put out there the type of documentation that could be relevant so that before the case is actually adjudicated, both sides know what's going on. I've said this before, but in a court situation, you don't have that surprise witness stuff going on. You don't have these surprise evidence. This stuff is almost
always... That's just on TV.
That's really just on television. There are some rare occasions where that stuff does happen, but for the most part, both sides know going in what's going on. On the 25th, so just a few days back, the judge ordered that as per Nintendo's request, because they're in discovery phase, that Mr. Storeman needs to produce download statistics on ROMs, which I don't know, he probably claimed he didn't have download statistics, as well as to produce his tax returns specifically from the years 2016 onward, which seems a little weird. You have to do just a little bit of digging, and it makes sense. Why 2016? Because the statute of limitations means that they are only going back 3 years on this one, and this one started in 2019, so 2016 makes sense. But why is it relevant that his taxes be there? As it turns out, ROM Universe was not run as an LLC, so Matt Storeman, the individual, is on the hook for all of that. So because he, you know, either doesn't have or has been unable to produce the exact numbers of, you know, money that he received through ROM Universe, they are, you know, he's been told that he has to turn that over so that, I mean, presumably this kind of income was claimed on his taxes. So that's how it makes the money, his tax returns, a relevant consideration. And lastly, in this recent filing on the 25th, Nintendo specifically requested that they get together to make a settlement on this before the discovery process is over, before it winds up going to, you know, going fully into court and being adjudicated on its merits. Let's not forget that the damages that Nintendo was seeking from ROM Universe, well, from Matt, was in the multiple billions of dollars. I think they might I think Nintendo's lawyers might have accepted that Mr. Stormin is not going to be able to provide them with billions in compensation, and has decided that maybe a settlement's the best way they're going to go. I don't know for sure, because I'm not a lawyer, I just play one on a podcast, and while this is still a developing story, I'll let you know if I hear anything more about it. It is interesting, it is relevant, but, you know, it's just legalese.
Dude, that was fantastic, and I want to know what happened. Well,
I will let you know when I know.
Fantastic. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's been our show. Thank you for tuning in to episode 159 of Two Nerds in a Pod. Now, before we go, we have one last segment we like to do called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about the cool, nerdy stuff we've been into on YouTube, on Netflix, on Hulu, on regular TV, the games we've been playing on mobile, on PlayStation, on Xbox, on Mac, on PC, and on our mobile devices. And if you're here live, you have a job to do. Let us know in the chat what you have been playing, because we're always looking for cool, nerdy stuff to get into. Mac, I'll lead out today. What do you think about that? I have been playing Neon Abyss on my Xbox, which is, it's a roguelite basically, right? It's just a roguelite where you go around, you shoot stuff with your gun, you beat bosses, you go through different rooms, you collect keys, upgrade your gear, and when you die, you start all over again, and it's been a blast. I've really been enjoying that. Now, Mac, the game that I probably played the most, that meant the most to me this past week, Donkey Kong Country 2, ladies and gentlemen. That game came out on the Nintendo Switch, I believe September 23rd, on the Nintendo Switch Online, and that's one of my favorite games of all time from my childhood. I will never forget the birthday, fifth grade, when I got that game for my Super Nintendo. It was one of the best birthdays I've ever had, and playing it almost brings a tear to my eye because it is gaming perfection. Mac, have you ever played DKC2?
I have, and it is a very good game.
Yeah, and so now my goal is to unlock the secret world and to beat all the levels, because I never did that as a kid for whatever reason. So that's a goal I have right now. Those are some of the games I've been playing. I've been playing new stuff too. As far as what I've been watching, just NBA basketball and the occasional movie. We watched Space Jam again this week with the kids, and it never gets old. How about you, man? What have you been into?
Well, I haven't been playing much. I played a game called Project Mercury recently. It's an indie title. I'm kind of on the fence about it, but didn't stop me from playing it for a couple of hours. I've mostly, though, just been watching, you know, the normal stuff. Been watching New Girl. I've been watching a little bit of Stargate SG-1. And I've also been watching Cobra Kai. Mrs. The Mac and I recently finished off Season 2, which is the end of the presently available bit. And I have to say, when you watch it, just ask yourself, is this an anti-alcohol PSA?
Which show is this?
Cobra Kai. It was for a period of time a YouTube exclusive, but it's been picked up by Netflix.
Huh.
So just think, is this an anti-drinking PSA as you watch Cobra Kai?
I will think about that.
Oh, and I almost forgot. I'm playing a little bit of Dungeons & Dragons on Mondays, a little bit of GURPS on Thursdays, spending time with wonderful people like Mr. Nice Guy, for example.
Yeah, we do that Thursdays. And Mac, one thing I forgot to mention real quick is I've been playing a little bit of VR. I've been playing Boneworks on the Valve Index, and that game is amazing. Also, who knew? People really like to use VR to argue about politics. I would have never imagined that someone would buy a VR headset and go into chat rooms and argue about politics all day. But I saw some of that. So let's read what people have been into in the chat, Mac.
Sure, I'll take watching if you take playing.
Deal.
Ishmobile is watching Outlander and Iron Man 3. Spenis is watching Pokemon Journeys and Cobra Kai. Let's see, Galvatron, oh, that's commentary. Uncle Ruckus is, Metz Girl is watching The Muppets on the Disney Plus new version. I didn't realize there was a new version.
It's good.
Stargate SG-1, Umbrella Academy, The Expanse, and Inception.
Yes.
Uncle Ruckus is watching Rick and Morty, Simpsons, and a range of movies that I can't remember off the top of my head. And Galvatron is watching The Boys, Season 2, Fargo, Season 4, and Psych. I know, you know, that I'm not telling the truth.
Love that show, man.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of have that vibe, right? I feel like...
I'd like to think so. I'd like to think that you're Sean Spencer and I'm Burton Guster.
Dude, if we ever work more on the YouTube channel, you know how they have that intro where they're just like running through a field at the beginning? We should totally do that.
Oh, I am so down.
That'd be fun and funny. Anyway, what have people been playing this week? Ishmobile's been playing Ocarina of Time and Insurgency Sandstorm. Spenis has been playing NBA 2K21, Fall Guys, MLB The Show, Ghosts of Tsushima, and Among Us, which Among Us is dope. We need to look into that. Mets Girl has been... Oh, wait, Uncle Ruckus has been playing Payday and Gears 5 and Satisfactory. Let's see. Mets Girl playing Earthbound GURPS and D&D. Galvatron is playing a lot of stuff. Witcher 3, Ghost of Tsushima, Red Dead Redemption 2, Far Cry 5, Outer Worlds, Fallout 4, Watch Dogs 2, and Breath of the Wild, Mac. Why don't you take us home, buddy?
Nice. Well, thanks everybody for being here. You are the greatest viewers on Twitch, listeners on podcast platform, and just the greatest people. Thanks for being a part of the show and making it, helping us to make it what it is. We hope that you have a good one. Be excellent to each other and keep it nerdy. We'll see you the same time next week.
See ya. Bye.